welcome to episode number 7 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. Let's see. There was a critical vulnerabilities that were found in web-based password managers. Now, this is these are the things where people say, oh, I've got too many passwords to remember, and so I'm going to put it all in one location. I've never used these because I never trusted them, but looks like an anonymous reader writes on, this was Slashdot, I believe, a group of researchers from University of California, Berkeley, have analyzed 5 popular web-based password managers and have discovered vulnerabilities that could allow attackers to learn a user's credentials for arbitrary websites. The 5 password managers they analyzed are LastPass, RoboForm, MyOneLogin, PasswordBox, and NeedMyPassword. Of the 5 vendors whose products were tested, only the last one, NeedMyPassword, didn't respond when they contacted them and responsibly shared their findings. The other 4 have fixed the vulnerabilities within days after disclosure. Since our analysis was manual, it is possible that other vulnerabilities lie undiscovered. They pointed out that they also announced that they will be working on a tool that automates the process of identifying vulnerabilities, as well on developing a principled, secure by construction password manager. I mean, that's one complaint I have all the time that I've heard friends and family. You know, it's like, well, I've got so many passwords to remember. Well, how many keys do you have in your key ring? You know.
Well, I mean. You have to be careful anytime that you put your password like that. I mean, essentially what's happening here, these services are for, these are websites that people are going out to and putting their credentials in a website. So, I mean, that's just scary. I mean, you don't put your credentials to something else on somebody else's server. You just don't do that. I mean, I don't care if they say they're secure or not. You don't put your credentials for one service, for your Gmail account, on LastPass, because that's another server. I mean, just, you know, if you have to, you know, put it in some sort of secure file on your computer, but even better yet, memorize the stinking thing. I mean, that's really what you need to do, is memorize
it. So this is almost like the equivalent of, I carry around one key all the time on my key ring that goes to a box that's sitting out on the street somewhere where all of my keys are. I mean, that's the only equivalent I can think of.
Yeah, and not only that, but other people actually have keys to that box. And not only that, but the box is made of glass and it can be broken. I mean, that's what this is like. I mean, that's if you really want an analogy like that, I mean, that's what this is like.
These things are scary.
Yeah.
All right.
PC Mag article, 5 months after Comcast announced plans to acquire Time Warner for $45.2 billion, pocket change, right, Kurt?
Oh, yeah.
Competitor Dish Network wants them to stop. The satellite broadcaster met with officials at the FCC this week to express serious competitive concerns about a combined Comcast and Time Warner cable. Chief among these concerns is the, quote, increased incentive and ability to leverage its control over the broadband pipe to undermine these services, end quote.
Ah.
Together, Comcast and Time Warner Cable have at least 3 choke points in the broadband pipe, which Dish fears will hinder competing video services. Each point, which is the last mile public internet channel, interconnection point, and any managed or specialized service channels, allow for the united company to shut out rivals like Dish. So Dish is getting a little scared here. They're afraid that a combined Comcast Time Warner Cable is going to create some competition for them. I like capitalism. I think competition is a good thing, and I'm not so sure that I want 2 big giants like Comcast and Time Warner Cable going together. But I definitely think that folks like Dish and DirecTV need some more competition so that in the end,
consumers win.
And I mean, we talked about Aereo not last week, but week before when we were on the air, and that was the thing with Aereo. I mean, Aereo was designed to help consumers win, and it lost. And, you know, I hate to see any time that a good company that's going to help consumers win loses. So whether or not Dish likes it, I just wanted to drive down prices.
Oh, yeah, I agree there. I guess they're learning what an oligopoly is and what could soon be Monopoly if it doesn't stop.
Exactly.
Let's see here. This is kind of old, been coming along, but the FCC public comment period for net neutrality ends tomorrow, July. Oh, that's today. Well, could get my news a little sooner. But you've still got some time, looks like, to put in your thoughts. The deadline is it's coming up fast. Final day is today. Total of 647,000 comments have already been sent. Google, Facebook, Netflix, Amazon, and other tech companies are making a final push for net neutrality, saying that the FCC decision shifts the balance from the consumer's freedom of choice to the broadband internet access provider's gatekeeping decisions. Consumer's Guide, to help you through the comment process. There, Coomer's has a guide to guide you through the comment process to make sure that your voice is heard. So, I mean,
what we got going on here is the net neutrality rule that we talked about several weeks ago. We mm-hmm. we did a whole deep dive section pretty much on net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the ability for a provider to provide bigger and better services to a bigger and better company who can actually, you know, has the funding to pay for that and could possibly leave consumers out in the cold when they don't have enough bandwidth to handle, you know, consumers' needs. So, you know, the FCC needs to think very seriously about what's going on here and make sure that they provide a neutral net internet for consumers once again. We're talking to, you know, people hearing us on the radio right now and listening to our podcast are consumers just like me and you, Kurt. And, you know, that broadband bandwidth needs to be available for those consumers. And that's what this is all about.
Well, yeah.
BGR article about Y2K, and you say, well, Justin, it's 2014. Y2K was 14 years ago and a few months, but here's another report of it. The Associated Press reports that Y2K is back with a bang in Pennsylvania, where the families of 14,000 deceased men were just sent notices that their dearly departed must register for the draft or face fines and even imprisonment. The men were all born between 1893 and 1897. So the youngest among them would be about 116 or 17 years old. The article from Associated Press says the glitch, it turns out, originated with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation during the transfer of nearly 400,000 records to the Selective Service. A clerk working the state's database failed to select the century producing records for males born between 1993 and 1997 and for those born a century earlier. So, Jan McKnight, the Penn Department of Transportation spokeswoman, said, "We made a mistake, a quite serious selection error." I would say so. The Selective Service didn't initially catch it because the state used two-digit code to indicate year of birth. The federal agency identified 27,218 records of men born in the 1800s, began mailing notices to them on June 30th, and began receiving calls from family members on July 3rd. By that time, they had already sent 14,250 notices in error. The Selective Service spokesperson, Pat Schuback, said, "It's never happened before."
That was, we didn't have computers 100 years ago.
So, I mean, you know, all these guys' families, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, getting a letter that your great-great-grandfather or that your great-grandpa, I guess, at this point, or maybe grandpa, was, you know, had been selected for Selected Service, and if he didn't go report, he was going to get thrown in jail, you know. And it was a, you know, it was a mistake by one person, and, you know, they didn't put the 19 and the 20
right.
or the 19 in the right spot. So,
right.
But
well, that's what we should, you know, that was the whole deal. In case our listeners don't know, that's the whole deal behind Y2K is programmers with insufficient foresight only put a 2-digit date, or maybe they're even told to just do a 2-digit date. Well, a computer doesn't. If it computer sees 14. And you could be talking about 1914 instead of 2014. The computer doesn't know any difference because there's only those two digits. So that was the biggest deal behind Y2K.
And that's why everybody thought everything was going to come to a grinding halt, because
right.
a lot of the older IBM systems were based on an older IBM and older COBOL programming language systems were based on a 2-digit year. And, you know, that's what they actually had to go through and fix. They had to make that fix, you know, starting in the early 90s, even before all the news came out about it. They had to start making the fix of getting ready for that 20 to be in front of the 00 instead of the system thinking, oh, good morning, it's January 1st, 1900. So.
Oh, to be a programmer in COBOL then. let's see here. I saw this and I just loved this one. Apparently, a guy found a bot that would automatically tweet anonymous edits sent to Wikipedia from, looks like it was from the UK. So the guy immediately thought, I need to do this for the United States. So basically, a Twitter bot that reports all the anonymous edits for Wikipedia that are made from the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives is an open source web developer named Ed Summers. He recently saw a friend tweet about Parliament wiki edits. UK Twitter bot that watched for anonymous Wikipedia edits coming from within the British Parliament's internal networks. Summers was immediately inspired to do the same thing for US Congress. The simplicity of combining Wikipedia and Twitter in this way immediately struck me as a potentially useful transparency tool. I guess we should explain why this matters. There's this whole deal about, actually we went over this a couple weeks ago, how you now have to tell Wikipedia if you're being paid or hired or whatever by a company to edit their Wikipedia page. So what this is happening is somebody from, say, U.S. Congress could edit something and maybe falsify something or say that something isn't quite how it actually is supposed to have been. But in this case, this guy can tell when the traffic comes from a building or from the internal network from Congress, and he can tell when an anonymous edit is there. And I actually looked at this, looked at some of their tweets there, and all it says is, let's read one of the first few. Draft Congress edits Wikipedia article edited anonymously by U.S. House of Representatives. And you can click on it, and it takes you right to the edit page or the article page and show you what edits were actually made. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, people essentially watching what's being made, what's being changed. So I assume that's probably going to get taken down, knowing.
Yeah, I would assume so. That's the first thing I was thinking. I was surprised it hasn't been taken down yet, because the government knows everything that's going on, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Big hey, brother.
The Network World article from earlier this week says Microsoft plans to enhance its Azure cloud backup and recovery by integrating technology from InMaj, a business continuity vendor it just acquired. InMaj's software continuously captures changes in data in real time to help enterprises immediately recover data to local systems or to fail over to a remote site. This is a corporate backup product. Microsoft plans to integrate the company's flagship Scout product, which is available both on appliances as a cloud platform with Azure Site Recovery Service. Notice they're talking about cloud platforms. We're going to be talking a lot about Microsoft later in the show, and that's that's interesting. Azure Site Recovery, formerly called Hyper-V Recovery Manager, was introduced last month and is designed as a cloud-based alternative to enterprise building and maintaining their own remote sites for disaster recovery. The acquisition, for an undisclosed sum, will help to make Azure the best disaster recovery site for all types of IT environments, including Windows and Linux, physical and virtualized, and Hyper-V and VMware. So essentially what you have here is you got a product that Azure has bought, and Azure is Microsoft's version of the Amazon cloud. And they have the ability to put virtual servers out there. If you store anything on Microsoft's cloud, then Azure is running all that in the background. If you work with Office 365, a lot of that stuff is running in the background in Azure. So anyway, essentially what's going on here is this new product in InMaj that they've purchased is helping them with recovery and disaster recovery. So if you have a site like, you know, your local business goes down, then it automatically fails over to the cloud, and your business continues to run. The servers continue to run out there in the cloud until you can get your local business back online, that type of thing.
I gotcha. Well, that sounds pretty cool. All right, let's see here. More Windows news. I don't know. Justin, have you done any work or heard of anybody using Windows 8? What's one of the first things they complain about in the bottom left corner?
Everything. Oh, wait, no, hang on. The start button.
Start button. Submitter named Billy Gates writes that a leaked alpha of Windows 9 has been brewing on the internet. Today, a screenshot shows that Microsoft showed us a build, which includes a start menu with additional tiny tiles for things like people, calendar, PC settings, and news, etc. The new hybridized start menu appears to be part of build 9788. Really doesn't matter. It's compiled on July 4th. No one seems to have leaked the ISOs or the images to, you know, install your own Windows for this build yet, but the general consensus seems to be that the build does indeed exist somewhere at Microsoft. This might be a feature in Windows NT kernel version 6.4, because the complete number version is 6.4.9, whatever. The screenshots show Windows 8.1 Pro, but that's not unusual for something that's early. So basically what they're saying is, you know, in Windows 8, the biggest change that people noticed was the absence of a start menu. They replaced it with an entire start screen. It's really good for people who are non-power users because, you know, I think of someone's great-grandmother trying to get their email. They see a big, giant square that says email 9. You've got 9 unread emails, and they're able to click on it. So a lot of people, they're getting a lot of backlash and still are from not having a start menu. So Microsoft said, oh, we'll give you a start button, which is not the menu. It takes you to the start screen. So this is, looks like they are finally going back on what they said, and it's either going to be a really early build of Windows 9 or instead of being the Windows 8.2, which is just an update. And
I don't think it'll be 8.2. I think it'll be more of Windows 9, and you know, we'll start to talk more about Windows 9 in the upcoming months, and it's coming. It'll be coming along soon. I'm not sure what the dates are for Windows 9 right now. Do you know? I don't think anybody does. Yeah. So, but you know,
fourth quarter maybe next year.
The start screen. I mean, okay. The start screen is nice for a tablet.
Touch interface.
I mean, if you have a Surface, a Microsoft Surface, or some other tablet that's running Windows 8 RT or Windows 8 Pro, it's great. I like it. But
makes sense.
On a computer, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, my mouse cursor is the same size as it's always been.
You don't need icons that large.
I didn't get a mouse cursor that was the size of Texas, you know, with the latest update. So, I mean, I don't need a tile that's 4 inches by 5 inches for me to be able to see it and click it.
Right.
I don't know. I like this idea better. But this picture that I'm seeing here in the article, essentially, it's a start menu, and like Kurt said, it's hybridized. It's a hybrid of the old Windows 7 start menu, the current, as far as I'm concerned, Windows 7 start menu, and the new big buttons that you see in Windows 8. I still don't like the big buttons, but that's just me. I hopefully there's a way to, you know, to customize that and say I don't want the big buttons, but that's just my opinion.
Right, gotcha.
Network World article, the NSA, and that's what I was trying to think of earlier when I was talking about the government. The NSA collects and stores most Americans' phone conversations, according to NSA whistleblower William Binney. At Timetable 2014, a Center for Investigative Journalism conference, Binney said, quote, at least 80% of fiber optic cables globally go via the U.S. This is no accident and allows the U.S. to view all communication coming in. At least 80% of all audio calls, not just metadata, and that's extra data that's along with a call, are recorded and stored in the U.S. The NSA lies about what it stores, end quote. It's pretty blunt. Also, according to The Guardian, Binney stated, quote, the ultimate goal of the NSA is total population control, but I'm a little optimistic with some recent Supreme Court decisions, such as law enforcement mostly now needing a warrant before searching a smartphone, end quote. Binney's claim of NSA recording and storing calls falls in line with what former FBI counterterrorism agent Tim Clementi told CNN after the Boston bombing. Clementi claimed that in the course of national security investigation, law enforcement could find out what was said in phone conversations between Catherine Russell and this other gentleman here that was in that, I can't pronounce his name, but he was involved in that incident. Sure. When CNN asked if FBI could, quote, actually get that, Clementi responded, quote, welcome to America. All that stuff is being captured as we speak, whether we know it or like it or not, end quote. So, you know, you know, stuff that, Kurt, as far as me and you are concerned, you know, it's just a normal thing of every day that we realize that the NSA has control of all of these data lines that are going in and out, and they have for years. It's nothing new. I mean, everybody's getting freaked out about it, and, you know, they have some right to. But anything that you do and say on, you know, anything except for me talking to you and you talking to me in
not
a closed
radio.
Room,
yeah.
not on the radio, it can and will be heard, you know. And you know, the recent even if you are in a closed room, the recent thing with Donald with the NBA and the Clippers and all that stuff where, you know, he got recorded in a room, there's that stuff everywhere. I mean,
oh, yeah.
People can pull out their iPhone and they can record you without you even knowing about it. So you just got to be careful. I mean, it's, you know, anything you put out there can be used against you.
Yeah, yeah. This one, I'm starting to love China news, like, seriously. In this one, Apple refutes a report on iPhone threat to China's national security. Well, for one thing, I picked this out because typically, if some hackers or whatever, I remember a vulnerability, this was quite a few years ago, where through a malformed SMS text message, they were able to gain control of other pieces of software in both RIM phones, BlackBerry phones, Windows phones, and this was before the new Windows Phone 7 and all that 8 and all that stuff, and Apple iPhones. And within hours, RIM had responded, Windows had responded, but Apple didn't respond for like 2 weeks. All right, so like they said, hey, we have a way of taking control of your phone. You probably need to patch this. The other one said, okay, yes, we'll get on that. Apple just said, nope, and just, you know, actually didn't say anything. So for Apple to jump up and say to jump up to China and say, oh, no, we're fine. I just had to say this one. Apple has never worked with any government agency from any country to create a backdoor into any of our products or services. We have also never allowed access to our servers, says the company said Sunday in a bilingual statement on its China website. Users have to make the choice to enable the iPhones to calculate their locations, while Apple does not track users' locations. Apple has never done so and has no plans to ever do so, the company said. The statement was in response to allegations by China's top state broadcaster that iOS 7 software and its frequent location service posed a security risk. The data can be accessed easily, although labeled as encrypted, and may lead to the disclosure of state secrets, CCTV said.
Everything's a state secret over there, though.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I remember when they were talking about Siri the first time, and they said, okay, we take snippets of your voice and store it for up to 2 years tied to your account. Then after 3 years, it's disconnected from your account and just kept for just research purposes, and then it's deleted. I don't know. What is that? Is that true anymore? I don't know.
I've never heard that before.
I don't know. I just find it funny that Apple would finally jump up and say, hey, you know, okay, well, you know, we don't want to lose this big customer, because usually Apple just does their own thing.
I mean, right.
But
Network World article, Yahoo has acquired online video streaming company Ravee with the aim of distributing content to more people, particularly via mobile devices. Ravee, founded in 2005, is focused on efficiently distributing high-definition quality video to a global audience with a focus on mobile. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. Yahoo is focused on growing video users and monthly streams, they said here in an announcement. While we're only getting started, we're very focused on this in 2014. Ravee's service will improve Yahoo's underlying technology infrastructure, and most of Ravee's employees will join Yahoo's R&D center in Tel Aviv, Israel. So another acquisition there for Yahoo. Interesting to see kind of the path, I guess, that Yahoo is trying to take. They're trying to recover. Are they doing a good job of recovery? That really depends upon your viewpoint of what you think about how Yahoo's doing. But I don't know. I almost think with Yahoo, it's a little too much too late. I'm concerned about their acquisitions. I'm concerned about the path that they're taking. I'm concerned that they're trying to become 50 miles wide and half an inch deep. And, I mean, you need to do something right and do it good. Right. You know, you need to do something and do it right, do it good, and be that person in the market. I haven't seen Yahoo do that in a long time.
No, I mean, honestly, what I think about Yahoo, it's just I think of them as search by category. That's honestly all I think, and I do not think to use that. So, I mean, what are they and what are they trying to become? You're spot on. So, yeah,
and I have no idea how to answer that right now with Yahoo. So, well, that wraps up our tech roundup, and now we're going to move on to App of the Week. All right, so App of the Week this week. Kurt's got some information on App of the Week, and I'm excited about this one because, you know, this is something that I think most of our users may already use, but some of you may have never tried it before, and it's some interesting stuff.
Okay, I'm sure pretty much everybody that's listening right now has used an internet browser. Now, a browser is how you interface with the internet. Most people might know this as the AOL icon. Other people might know this as the blue E. But a browser allows you to interface with the internet. Pull up web pages, download files, any kind of multimedia. So, Google, a couple of years ago, came up with a browser called Google Chrome.
2007, if I remember, 2007 or 8, if I remember correct.
Oh, wow. That's a lot farther back than I thought. Now, officially, Chrome in programming is the amount of unusable real estate on a program. So, like, the space between buttons, that's considered Chrome. It's funny because Google Chrome actually eliminates a lot of the program's Chrome. So, it's a very clean interface compared to a lot of other browsers. If you just go to their website, I mean, it says usable on Windows 8, 7, Vista XP. Also download Chrome for OS X and for Linux. I have used it on all those devices except Vista, and I mean, it looks the same across the board. So that's good. And that one good thing that they do, I think they were the first to really, the feature of syncing all your bookmarks and all your settings, but they're the first ones to get it right and get it very seamless. They also have the Chrome Web Store. I guess there's, if you make a bookmark on one computer and then you sign into Chrome on other computers, all of your settings, all of your apps that you are extensions, all of your bookmarks, they'll all be synced across the board. They also have the Chrome Web Store, basically just like the Apple App Store, pretty much. They basically work across the board. If you have it on one browser on one device, it will work on another browser on another device. Now, the exception to that might be mobile, because mobile is obviously quite different than, say, your other interfaces. Let's see here. They're the first ones, I believe, to do... they weren't the first to do tab browsing, but tabs above the address bar. So, again, that just makes it much more logical and really easy to use. Let's see... Other than that, I mean, there's a lot of business aspects as well. They're really trying to push out to the businesses, but
I really like Chrome. I mean, I use it on. I did not like it at first. September 2nd, 2008 was the original release date where they released it for Microsoft Windows. And I remember when they released it, I looked at it. I really didn't like the look and feel of it when it first came out. But I use it now on my Mac exclusively, and I use it most of the time on a PC as well. It's a good browser. I like it. It connects well with Google, which makes searching easier and things like that. And as far as, you know, the number of connections that it makes back to a web server, Internet Explorer, every time you fire up a web page, makes multiple connections back to a web server. And sometimes it does that in a way that slows things down. And Internet Explorer on a PC is just notorious for having compatibility issues with websites. And Firefox is getting worse as well. Over the past couple of updates, Firefox has had some major issues with a bunch of different websites. And, you know, you try to go to a website in Firefox and you just don't get there. And there's nothing wrong with the website on the other end. There's something wrong with the browser itself.
Right.
And Firefox seems to come out with an update every other day or so. It's just ridiculous.
I think it's up to like 30 now.
Yeah. But. So, I mean, it's they have all kinds of security holes because Firefox tries to be bleeding edge for some reason, and then they get cut a lot. And so Chrome is, to me, a more secure browser. So, you know, if you haven't tried Chrome, you know, www.google.com/Chrome, go try it out, see what you think, and, you know, maybe even shoot us an email or post something on our Facebook page. Let us know what you think about Chrome if you haven't used it before.
Oh, yeah. There's really nothing else to say. It's just very clean, very standards compliant, works on almost any website. So,
good deal. So that's App of the Week. Go try it out, google.com/Chrome. Now we're going to transition into our deep dive. So, for our deep dive today, first of all, we said we were going to talk a little bit about Microsoft, and we will. As you may or may not know, Microsoft has a new CEO. It's no longer Steve Ballmer. And if you're thinking, who's Steve Ballmer? I thought it was Bill Gates. Well, you're kind of behind the times. Bill Gates hasn't been around as CEO for a while. Steve Ballmer's been in, I don't remember the exact dates, but he was in there for a few years. And then now we have Satya Nadella, who is the new CEO of Microsoft. Recently, in an open letter from him, he showed that the Ballmer era is indeed over, and he's ready to shake some trees, rock some boats, and insert your favorite cliche here, to change course at the company. The letter makes it pretty clear that Nadella is looking to reverse course on what Ballmer was doing, particularly at the end of his run. It doesn't get much clearer than this statement. Quote, more recently, we have described ourselves as a, quote, devices and services company, end quote. While the devices and services description was helpful in starting our transformation, we now need to hone in on our unique strategy. So translation for that is, Ballmer, go play with your new basketball team and get lost. You know, so and the reference to that is Ballmer bought the Clippers. And there's been some articles come out today about Microsoft may lay off over 6,000 employees by Bloomberg, talking about that, and also some, you know, people wondering about these changes at Microsoft. So, you know, we're looking at the new era, Kurt, or so that's what Nadella says. And, you know, question number one, what's brought Microsoft to where they are today?
Well, where do they start? They started basically as a software company, and they were considered to be, that was, I remember reading an article said, and this was years ago, that they were the perfect company in terms of they don't have a product that is waste, like is waste. Like what they create is doesn't have waste. It's just software. It's just electrons. And they relied on other companies, other systems to put their product on. And so like Dell, for instance, you know, their computers all have batteries that have to be properly disposed of. It was, you know, they were said it was supposed to be the perfect company, just software. And they've grown over the years into so many acquisitions and with Office, you know, their biggest products are, you know, you've got the operating system, you've got Office. You know, there's a lot of different...
And you got their server products and, you know, they're mainly in two different realms. They're in the consumer side, which our listeners, you know, a lot of our listeners have Windows 7 and Windows 8, and they used to have Windows XP before they listened to us a few episodes ago and learned that that was out of support, and they went out immediately and bought Windows 7 or Windows 8 and upgraded their machines, right?
Was there one in between there called Vista, maybe?
Don't do that. I mean, you know, and then they have the server products. So, you know, you may go out to your email, maybe Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out to an Exchange email site, then that's Microsoft. If you go out and see a SharePoint web page, then that's Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're pretty wide based.
Once they acquired Lotus, wasn't it Lotus that they acquired? Lotus 1-2-3? And that's how Office grew out of that? Or was that just a competitor that they squashed?
Well, I mean, Lotus is still around.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they're still around.
Got it mixed up with another one.
Yeah, so, but they are being squashed. So, oh, I mean, you know, Microsoft today is a lot different than Microsoft was when it first started, when Bill and Steve, you know, first started things up there. You know, and the question is, up to this point, you know, they've done a lot of good, but what have they done wrong to get them where they are? In this position where this new guy has to come in and say, hey, okay, you were taking us down the wrong path, Steve Ballmer, and we're going to have to get back into the right path.
Well, I've got to say one more good thing that they did, and I would have never, no one would, I don't think anybody would have ever guessed this, the gaming consoles, mm-hmm. Xbox. I mean, if you had said, you know, I play online games, and it's like, well, are you on the computer? And it's like, no, I'm a console. You'd know it's almost 90% of the time it's going to be Xbox Live. I mean, I thought Xbox Live, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, and it was pretty cool. They've done a lot of things right. Problems that they're doing wrong is, you know, you're paying for a service and you still have ads. You know, that still makes, you know, I can understand, you know, the prices could be higher if they didn't have the ads, but, you know, that's one thing they are doing quite well is Xbox. But back to your question saying, you know, where do they go wrong? Oh, man. I guess... Yeah, I'm thinking of the most recent ones is like Windows Vista. Windows, it seems like every other Windows Office release, or not Office release, excuse me, operating system release is bad, and all the opposite ones are good. Have you ever heard that? So XP was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Vista, not so good. 7, great, solid. Windows 8, not so awesome.
And then you go back before that, you go, you know, you look at Windows 95, eh. You know, it was okay. It was their first start at it.
Yeah.
You know, and then Windows 98 was okay, and then Windows 98 Second Edition was even better. And then you had Windows 2000, Windows NT, Windows 2000, which was great. And then you had Windows ME, which was just a complete disaster.
We had ME. It was the Millennium Edition, and it was okay.
It was a disaster, Kurt. It was a complete disaster. There's no okay to ME.
Yeah, maybe that's how I started with my into the computer world. Is I was trying to fix problems.
Yeah, exactly. You started trying to fix the disaster. Well, you know, and you were talking about Xbox. I mean, that's what Nadella said. He said he essentially said that dumping Xbox would be incredibly stupid. I mean, you know, and the same thing you just said. You know, getting rid of Xbox and all the stuff that goes along with their gaming console. I agree with you. I agree with him. I agree with you. I think it'd be incredibly stupid because, to be honest with you, that's what's kept Microsoft afloat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not their server infrastructure.
Office.
It's not their, you know,
phones.
It's definitely not their phones, and it's definitely not their tablets because they had to give their tablets away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why they've decided to continue with this. And
I'll tell you why in a second.
Well, tell us why. Hopefully, they'll change it.
When the Xbox was first released, it was the original Xbox. Some people call it the Duke because it's so big. Anyway, so they released it, and they sold it at a loss through its entire. To the entire run, the original Xbox was sold or lost.
So they thought they were going to do that again with the Surfaces?
This is what Microsoft does. So when the Xbox 360 was released, it was only a couple years into its product run that they started making profit on it. And that's what Microsoft does if because they have so much money, is they will enter a market with a product that is either mediocre or good, you know, not amazing and not terrible. They'll enter the market with a product, sell it at a loss for a long time while they can, and build up their customer base, and then either release a new product or make changes to it, and then they'll get to where they can, you know, they've got enough economies of scale to build up and start selling at a profit. And it's worked for the Xbox. It worked with Office originally.
Right.
You know, they sold it with Windows, not even or
they give it for free.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then you know, completely drove out WordPerfect,
mm-hmm.
and whatever else. And so that's what they're now doing with Surfaces. I'm not saying that it's going to catch on, but that's probably, they say, well, it's worked before.
We'll do it again.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing about Nadella is that, well, just a little bit of background on him. He originally came from Sun Microsystems. He was a tech manager there at Sun Microsystems. And then in 1992, he joined Microsoft, and he started off in Microsoft, in their R&D online services division, was vice president of the Microsoft business division, and then he moved up to being executive vice president of Microsoft's cloud and enterprise group, and then that's when he became CEO after that. I find it interesting that he comes directly from the cloud side of Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
What does that tell us about where technology is going today, for one, but where Microsoft is going to go with that technology?
Well, when you first start up a new tablet from them, Surface RT, any one of these, and you first turn it on, it will go through the setup process. And one of the very first things it gives you is signing in to or creating a OneDrive account. So automatically, with any Windows you've got at least 7 gigs right there for free to back up to the cloud. Now, this also includes if you have any, if you have multiple Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8 devices, and that includes 8.1. If you buy an app on one, you can automatically save all of your settings and everything between each device through the cloud. I'll save some search, and I'll see a new folder pop up. If it's something that I need to directly interact with, it'll pop up there, and I can see it on all my devices. So they're pulling very, very heavily, very closely with they're pushing the cloud, even to people where they don't even realize it. So it's very closely tied. If you buy Office, you can automatically save to the cloud built right into Office. Very, very closely tied together. So I think that's what they're seeing as the future. You know,
well, and the cloud's a necessity at this point. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here just thinking. I'm looking around me, and I have 1, 2. Three, four. I have four different devices here in front of me that I'm just sitting here with that are network capable, ready devices that can connect to the internet and obviously connect to the cloud storage. And again, don't let that word freak you out. Cloud, cloud. Essentially, all it means is your
files,
data, your files are getting stored somewhere else on somebody else's server. It's not way up in the air somewhere. It's just a different data center somewhere else. And it's like when I was growing up as a kid. I always thought that you get words confused. I thought that the Weather Channel guy would come on and he would talk about the windshield, and I was like, what does the windshield on a car have to do with anything? And it's wind chill. Not windshield. So, I don't want you guys to get the words confused. The cloud, it's not something way up in the air.
It's
not the same thing. We're talking about, a data center that's somewhere else. And when we're talking about Microsoft's cloud, we're talking about Microsoft data centers that they have all around the world. We were talking about Azure earlier, and that's what it is. It's just what they call their servers that they store your data on. That's where they're going.
Apple has iCloud. We'll see what are the names of these. It used to be called
Amazon
SkyDrive.
Amazon has Amazon Web Services.
Oh, yeah.
AWS.
Web Services. I thought there'd be more to list off. That's all I can think of.
Well, I mean, there's lots of, a lot of companies have
Dropbox.
Their own. A lot of companies have their own internal clouds. They all their different, banks, for instance. Banks have clouds. All their different branch offices connect back to a central point. That's a cloud. It's data that's flowing over the internet back to a central storage location, and that, and it's kind of invisible to the users. It makes them think it's right there in front of them, stored on their device, and it's really not. So that's cloud.
Right.
It's interesting to me to see where Microsoft's going. I mean, is this the right direction for them? I think that it's better than, I think it's better than where they've been going in the past. I think they need to be careful to keep their other options open, but I think they've needed somebody with some vision. I mean, what's your thoughts on this, Kurt?
Well, I really think, to survive, every company has to, every company has a role that they play in either in somebody's lives or in everything. And people change. Everything changes. So businesses have to change with them or die. And
I think
they're going to have to change. And I heard someone say that they're becoming more of a hardware company, because you're seeing Apple release amazing hardware, really great hardware. And Microsoft has always just been software. And now, you see the Surface, Surface RT, all this stuff, like the Xbox, that's hardware. Built from Microsoft, of course. They're obviously contracted out to whatever factories and all the other junk, but I think this is the right move, but it could be, again, like you said, with Yahoo, you know, a little too little, too late. But, of course, they're really big, so they can take a hit for a while, as they've shown with the Xbox, they've shown with Office, and maybe they'll show with the next version of Windows, maybe, you know, where they're going to go.
Well, and, you know, we were talking about the cloud as well, and I agree with what you're saying, Kurt. I mean, you got to find your niche, and you got to do it right. You know, and Nadella says here in his speech that he made, he said the core is Microsoft is the productivity and platform company for the mobile-first and cloud-first world.
Hmm.
We will reinvent productivity to empower every person and every organization on the planet to do more and achieve more. So, I mean, you know, he's coming from the cloud side. He ran the cloud side of Microsoft. He's gotten it to where it is, and that's what they're going to push. I mean, you know, it's going to come to the point where, you know, we don't get computers with hard drives anymore. They're just going to be connected to the network, and you know, the storage is going to be somewhere else. And you can, you don't have to pick up your computer and take it with you. Well, I mean, you will pick up your computer and take it with you because it's going to be your phone. It's going to be your tablet. It's going to be the computer that you sit down at the airport terminal, because it's not actually going to be in your computer's not actually going to be at your house. It's going to be out somewhere on the server somewhere, and you know that's where we're going, and I think that's where they're going.
Funny that you should say that. I actually saw just earlier today, I saw a little bit of an article that said that they're talking about basically you're paying a fee for every month for an operating system, like. Whereas now Office 365, you pay however many dollars a month to use it. That there might be, they might do that with Windows, the next version of Windows.
Yeah, and it's very possible. They thought that's what everybody thought at first, that Windows 8 was going to be. The rumor was that Windows 8 was not going to be an installable operating system; that it was just going to be a cloud platform. And it's grown more that way, but it's not quite to that point yet. Office 365 is completely in the cloud. You have Word, Excel, PowerPoint out in the cloud, all your documents out in the cloud. So they're moving that way. Mm. I mean, definitely moving that way. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Nadella does at Microsoft. It's going to be interesting to see how the transition goes. It's going to be interesting to see who stays and who goes and who he keeps and what we see from Microsoft in the next 12 to 18 months. I'm pretty excited about what they're going to do.
So. Oh, yeah.
Another article for our deep dive, this one coming from Engadget and BGR, expected to launch this fall, Apple's iWatch smartwatch may be delayed. New note from MacRumors, Ming-Chu Kuo reveals he's the big Apple inside reveal guy. The well-connected insider who has offered many accurate details about unreleased Apple devices now says that mass production for the iWatch is set for November. Previously, he said that the smartwatch would hit mass production in late September. Apparently, the development of the iWatch is a lot more complex than initially expected, which is why Apple may be delaying launch of the wearable device. And Kurt just corrected my pronunciation here. It's Ming-Chu Kuo.
Ming-Chi Kuo.
Ming-Chi Kuo. All right, there we go. Sorry about that, Ming-Chi.
No, sorry, too much anime.
Sorry about that, Ming-Chi. The iWatch is expected to offer advanced health and fitness features with all the new iOS health kit and things like that. And not only that, but the wearable tech market exploded this week with news of the Apple iWatch and the new additions in the Android Wear technology as well. So, you know, first of all, Kurt, who's going to capture this market? Is Android going to capture this market, or is Apple going to capture this market?
Well, Android hit first. Android has more phones, but Apple has the I heard someone once say they have the mind share, whereas people may be using one particular device, but they want to be using another device, or they want to move to another device. And the way Apple always polishes their products, it might work quite well. Like, might be really, really seamless. So I really have nothing that I could relate this to. I mean, there's the Fitbit, I think. I mean, there's you know, there's obviously tech there that's already out there, but I've never seen one.
Well, I mean, there's been wearable tech for forever. I mean, as a kid growing up, I had one of those
calculator.
I had one of those little Timex watches, And you could stick it up to your computer screen, and there'd be all these little lines come up on the screen. It would read the little lines, and it would actually put calendar entries in your watch.
Oh, you're a dork.
Yeah, I was a dork. So, I mean, wearable tech's been around forever. Am I excited about the iWatch? Kurt's laughing at me now. Am I excited about the iWatch? Am I excited about wearable tech? Well, obviously, yes, since I've been using wearable tech since I was in the fourth grade. But, you know, is this for everybody? Is this going to be? Are we going to see everybody walking around with a smartwatch?
Honestly, I'm going to say no. But the way it always happens is you've got the bleeding edge people, or the leading edge, bleeding edge, whatever. That go out and have to grab everything new, and then as more and more people use it, then as prices come down, more and more people will end up buying it, and then it will become something we all want and need, or we'll be convinced that we want it. So I guess it just depends on how sharp the edge you want to be. But I think this stuff is potentially really cool. And if you even mix this with the Internet of Things and RFID technology, I mean, you could, let's say you've got one of these watches on, you might pick up a product at the store, and suddenly your phone pops up and gives you the information about it because it's detecting, you know, there's a reader on your, I don't know, watch that's telling you what it is. And it could give you more information about it. Then they'll tell you, oh, you looked at, I don't know, 20 things while you're at the store today, and give you a list of what all you looked at, and you could compare prices and everything. I mean, there's all kinds of things, and these could be used maliciously to say that, you know, I know that Kurt Lawson, he's 26 years old, he looked at this and this product here, that they use that for data mining, saying, okay, well, now we know we need to market towards this demographic. I mean, there's all kinds of implications for marketing and everything else. I mean, marketing's the biggest thing I usually think of when I think of RFID technology, but there's all kinds of stuff.
I'm looking forward to seeing these wearables come out. I'm looking forward to the price going down, and I'm looking forward to putting one on my arm eventually. So,
oh, yeah.
I like the idea. You know, some people don't. I do, and you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see you know, how that's going to work with, to see if they can make the technology work better to make it, you know, good for the user. And that's why I'm glad that Apple's getting into the market.
Oh, they always polish it.
Exactly. I'm glad that they're getting into the market to polish it. You're exactly right.
And that's one thing. Now, this is me personally going on here. Apple typically will be either the second or last to enter a particular market, or they'll be a little slow getting into a market, and then they'll release something that is very polished but maybe missing one or two features. The very first iPhone did not have copy and paste, and my Motorola flip phone had copy and paste. I was a little upset about that, to be honest, but then they released it and saying, hey, this is a new product, you have to have the newest iPhone, it has copy and paste. And now they release, oh, now you have a true multitasking, or, well, it wasn't really true, but you know, they'll release it later and everybody has to have it, because they wait and polish it and wait till it's completely done before they release it. I think that they'll you know, release this a little later, and then they'll integrate it with iHome whenever they have something in your home. Mm-hmm. And we'll see a lot of things there. So I think it's very interesting.
Well, and there's the potential for them to begin to, you know, work with other vendors as well with this type of stuff, with other watchmakers and other vendors. We've seen them start to do that with the iHome stuff. So, you know, I'm looking forward to getting my hand on an iWatch and checking it out. Well, that concludes our deep dive for today. We talked about two articles in pretty big depth, and we're going to move on to tech in numbers. So today, the technology market actually suffered a little bit, 0.35% loss today. And our top gainer for today was Tower Semiconductor, LTD, excuse me. Independent specialty foundry dedicated to the manufacture of semiconductors. They gained 0.3 of a point. And then also our loser for the day was Westell Technologies. They provide site and outside plant solutions, and they were down 0.1 of a point. And then today we were talking about Microsoft, and they were up 0.3 of a point today, closing out at 42.45. And that is tech in numbers.
All right. So now we're going to get to one of my favorite topics next, and that would be weird and goofy tech.
You just like the music.
I do love the music. Thank you for unlicensed music. Let's see here. So I'm still not completely sold that this isn't real, or that this isn't fake, but we have the, let's see, what's it called? I can't find it here. The No More Woof. Your dog will soon speak its mind wearing No More Woof, a small wearable gadget that converts animal thoughts into human language. The brainchild of Nordic Society for Invention and Discovery, a Scandinavian research lab, uses the latest technology in microcomputing and EEG to recognize the pet's brain waves and spell them out in English through an attached loudspeaker. For the prototypes they are currently developing, breaking the communication barrier between people and man's best friend, the design team is working towards establishing different voices and tones which would fit the personality and gender of individual pets. At the moment, the device only speaks English, but models in Mandarin, French, and Spanish are anticipated soon. The three variations of No More Woof with distinctive degrees of functionality and development can be pre-ordered through Indiegogo. Now, they're saying, they're very adamant about saying, this is just a prototype. This is just, we're just testing. We're just, you know, it's not being officially released yet, but...
Does this work on small children?
I doubt it.
Okay. Just curious.
But if you look at the picture of this thing, it looks like a dog wearing a headset, to be completely honest.
With a weird-looking shoehorn thing at the bottom of it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, again, if this isn't real, they've almost fooled me, because
I hope it's not real, because just like every one of these weird and funny tech things, somebody has wasted their time. Goodness gracious.
Well, that's how it goes, though.
Well, we thank you for listening for today's show. That wraps it up for Tech Talk today. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk, and on Twitter at WCCR Tech Talk as well. Don't forget, catch the podcast either on Facebook or by searching Tech Talk Today on iTunes. And don't forget, tune back in next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time here in Williamsburg, and on the web at ucumberlands.edu/WCCR. And again, I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's see, stay with us for, oh, well, stay with us. Stay tuned to hear the end of our Summer Tuesday lineup for this week, Summer 2014, with the Figure 4 Fallout with Russell Reitner, Bo Kid, Casey Malone, Dustin Hardin, and Justin Durbin. You all take care and have a fantastic week, and we'll hear you next week.